Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time documentary aficionada.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that loves its celebrity stories, especially those that remind us that whatever talents the respective public figure might have, or to be honest, might not have, each is, at heart, no less of a human than any of us who hear about them through the gossip media. The three of us watched two streaming documentary features that targeted such figures, one a television host and the other a vaunted sex symbol. The first feature that we'll discuss is the Netflix documentary Sunday Best, The Untold Story of Ed Sullivan. We'll follow that by talking about Mariska Hargitay's look at the mother she barely knew, the HBO Max documentary My Mom, Jane. Let's begin by turning the clock back to the 1940s. That was when a New York newspaperman named Ed Sullivan first attracted the attention of TV producers. And after a somewhat rough start, Sullivan became, for the next 23 years, the host of one of the most popular television variety series in history. First labeled Toast of the Town, but later changed to The Ed Sullivan Show, the Sunday night program became popular by showing a wide range of performers, from jugglers, ventriloquists, and plate spinners, to musical acts of all sorts, most famously Elvis Presley, and later the Beatles. But the tack that Sunday Best director Sasha Jenkins takes is something that many viewers, even those among the millions who tuned in every week, never really considered. That Sullivan was instrumental in introducing dozens of black entertainers to a national audience. And he did so, one, because he thought it was the right thing to do, and two, he did so despite threats from some viewers and sponsors who resented what they saw as counter to their desire to keep the races segregated. Director Jenkins's Sunday Best gives us memories of some of the program's great performances, from Louis Armstrong to Bo Diddley, Nina Simone to Miriam Makeba, James Brown to Harry Belafonte, and he underscores their impact by interviewing the likes of Smokey Robinson, Dionne Warwick, and Motown founder Berry Gordy. But the documentary's greatest feat is to pay tribute to the man who defied the climate of the time to make sure this group of talented people earned their rightful due.
I thought this was an odd film as it was unfolding. It's pretty slight. It runs less than 80 minutes, and it glides past a lot of Ed Sullivan's history that I personally didn't know and I wanted to know more about. And then it got to the end, and I wondered if this was why, because it's dedicated to the memory of the man who directed it, Sasha Jenkins, who died before this was released. He died earlier this year. And he was a longtime music journalist with a focus on rap and hip hop. And he's previously directed documentaries about the Wu-Tang Clan and Rick James and Louis Armstrong. And this documentary, Sunday Best, actually played at the Tribeca Film Festival a couple years ago. I don't know if it was in the same form as it is on Netflix now, but its timing being dropped on Netflix feels very apropos in the wake of what's going on with CBS right now and, and the canceling of Stephen Colbert and all of that. But I want to talk about the issue of talking heads in documentaries, and I'm talking about the famous people that they put on camera, because you're right, there are some heavy hitters here. And I like hearing from legends, and I think that Belafonte and Otis Williams from The Temptations, I think they have the best stories. Williams in particular is so moving to listen to as he talks about what it was like to be a black performer touring around America at the time, especially in the South. But I think this movie, Sunday Best, really could have benefited from the insights of historians and journalists and critics. And Sullivan himself was a journalist. And I just happened to watch that two-part HBO documentary about Billy Joel that's on right now. And it has some of the most famous musicians in the world. It's got like Paul McCartney and Bruce Springsteen and Sting, and they're fawning all over Billy Joel and what a great songwriter he is. But it's the interviews in that film with music writers and critics that actually make you think differently about the subject of Billy Joel, that actually bring artistic and historical context to his work and to his place in the culture. And I would have liked more of that here in talking about Ed Sullivan's impact, because as the talking heads stand, we do get these great stories. And I, you know, Smokey Robinson and Berry Gordy and all those people. But it's just kind of talking about how great Ed Sullivan is for 80 minutes. I wanted a little bit more, especially in a film made by a journalist. And I don't know if Jenkins were still alive. I don't know if the movie would have played differently. But that, I think that's what I was missing here. I do want to talk more about the archival stuff because, I mean, it's incredible. There are performances in this that make it worth watching ultimately. But Yeah, I did not know a lot of this stuff about Ed Sullivan, and I want to know even more. So maybe that's a tip in the movie's favor.
And maybe it plays out differently for those of us who watched it every Sunday night.
I'm sure it does.
Although
yeah.
I was a kid, you were a teenager. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't know a lot of the backstory or the context. We did see the talents of people whom we would not have had the opportunity to view in any other circumstances because the country.
Not even on Dick Clark.
No,
the country
was divided. I mean, it was really a time period where what he did was pretty bold. That's the only word that I can say for it. But I don't disagree with you, Nathan, especially for younger generations who become accustomed to all of these, you know, shows that have waxed and waned over the years. And now we're, you know, have all this reality TV. And I think they tried to underscore the cultural phenomenon that this show was, but I'm not even sure that they captured that adequately. I mean, you know, they had these pictures of people in the 50s with their black and white TVs, which is what we had, you know, tuning in and so forth. But everybody, I mean, 37 million people in the United States watched, you know.
Yeah, and I've grown up with however many millions of retrospectives it feels like about the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. So I at least knew
much. Yeah. Right. So I agree that I think it could have been enhanced because it was relatively short. Mm-hmm. I think it could have been enhanced by a little bit more context about him. You know, we know that he was a journalist. He seemed really smart, which is something, you know, we didn't know back in the day. Was he just a TV presenter or, you know, what was going on? And I think they could have played into that a little bit more.
They could have done a whole shtick of all the impersonators, of all the impressionists doing impressions of him. Rich Little, Frank Gorshin, they all just made fun of him. You know, I was looking forward to Sunday Best, the untold story of Ed Sullivan, just simply because it was a part of my childhood and I really wanted to see it. And so I was surprised the tack that Jenkins took, and it was all about race. Once I got used to that, then I thought, oh, well, this is interesting. I never ever considered this. I never thought about this. So the movie does do a service to those of us who watched the show and for people who never did watch the show. But I would have liked other stuff, too. For example, Ed Sullivan deserves all the credit in the world for breaking the racial barrier on international television. But where are the stories about Elvis told he can't wiggle his hips? And
but we've heard those a million times.
I know it.
Times.
And what about the Stones who can't use Let's Spend the Night Together?
Right.
I mean,
there,
it isn't exactly like there was no censorship and no. There's a larger story to tell here, which I think you're saying.
Yeah.
And part of the difficulty here is, I mean, we see all this amazing archival footage that Nathan can talk about in a little bit more detail. But it seems as though, you know, we're sort of immersed in this world of black performing artists. That's not how it played out on this weekly TV show. I mean, it's not like every week you tuned in and saw X, Y, and Z. I mean, it was really, and that's what I think he did so effectively. He sort of gradually introduced these people with stellar, impossible talent to a broader audience. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why.
Amid when the plate spinners and Topo Gigio and the jugglers.
Exactly. So it was a really mixed bag. But I think he was very artful in the way that he introduced these performers to the
because
viewing public.
Barry Gordy even talks about how he wouldn't put pictures of the artists on Motown albums because he was like, white people won't buy these albums if, you know, black artists are on them. So, you know, he had that uphill battle too. One little other thing I want to talk about before we end with talking about the performances in this. I really wish that documentaries would cut out using AI recreations of real people's voices. It sounds bad. And I'm just like, you could hire somebody to read these. I mean, I think Rich Little's probably still around. You call him up, give him some money. Anyway, some of my favorite archival performances in Sunday Best. I mean, right at the top, Jackie Wilson doing Lonely Teardrops, one of the greatest songs ever. Wow, what a dynamic performance. Yes. He's all over the stage. He's so good. Of course,
Little Richard.
13-year-old Stevie Wonder doing Fingertips. Gladys Knight and the Pips looking incredible. And my favorite, Diana Ross and the Supremes, one of my favorites ever. So, I mean, man, the music in this is stellar. And I'm glad that Jenkins lets those clips play, too. He lets them breathe. I really appreciated that.
Yeah. At any rate, that was our discussion of the Netflix documentary Sunday Best, The Untold Story of Ed Sullivan. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss the HBO Max documentary, My Mom Jane. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Subscribe to your favorite public radio programs when you become a Spokane Public Radio sustainer, just like any news or entertainment service you use. But unlike those other services, you decide how much you want to pay. Set up an electronic funds transfer, and monthly installments will be withdrawn automatically from your account. Plus, you can start or stop your subscription anytime you want. As a sustainer, you help make your public radio station strong. You support your favorite programs, and you never have to wonder when to renew. You're part of the community that sustains public radio. Call 509-328-5729 during business hours or go online to SpokanePublicRadio.org. Click the red donate button and start the process. Working together, we make our community a better place to work, play, and listen.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Netflix documentary, Sunday Best, The Untold Story of Ed Sullivan. Let's now turn to an HBO Max documentary that details the efforts of the actress-turned-filmmaker Mariska Hargitay to learn about the secrets involving her mother, the sex symbol Jane Mansfield. Anyone who has watched the television show Law & Order Special Victims Unit knows who Mariska Hargitay is, or they think they do, which is curious because for most of her life, Hargitay wasn't fully aware who she was herself. Only a toddler when her mother, the 1960s sex symbol Jane Mansfield, died, Hargitay grew up thinking she was one person when all along she was someone else. The documentary My Mom Jane, which Hargitay directed, is both an exploration of her family history, detailing both her mother's rise from Texas housewife to international fame, and her own discovery of a family she never knew. Yes, we find out a lot about Mansfield that isn't otherwise popular knowledge. Her dumb blonde mannerisms were an act, and she had talent as a pianist, a violinist, a dancer, and an actress, all of which producers ignored and instead focused on her physical attributes. But it's the surprises that Hargitay discovers that make her documentary something different from and more interesting than your typical celebrity biographical study.
Well, of course, I'm the quintessential SBU fan. And so I was curious to see how Mariska Hargitay would fare as a director of a subject that is autobiographical to the max. And I enjoyed a lot about this Jane Mansfield documentary. There are a few things that I think could have been changed, but isn't that always the case? Isn't that why we're here, to criticize choices that were made by the director? This is an atypical documentary because she uses her own family members to sort of tell the story. And she is significantly younger. You know, she had a half-sister who I think was 12 years older. Mm-hmm. And then
she was only three when...
Right, when her mother died. And so her memories of her mother are really pretty faint and faded, of course, because she was a toddler at the time. So she's relied on other people throughout her lifetime to tell her who her mother is and was and so forth. And so I thought it was a great idea to go and interview her siblings first. And other people might not agree totally with that choice. But we learn a lot more about Jane Mansfield through these interviews, through the cherry picking that, of course, Hargitay does about her mother's life. But, you know, the fact that she spoke four different languages fluently and all this stuff. And Mansfield had to make a decision at one point about how she played this out, because she did have this curvaceous figure that was, you know, sought after for reasons other than her acting talent. And so she played into that ultimately. And the thing that was most intriguing to me was the kids said she had a totally different persona as their mom. She actually spoke in a completely different voice. And they hated when they heard her put on this little, as I think one of the siblings refers to it as, this Minnie Mouse kind of voice. And I found that to be fascinating. Then we find out that Hargitay herself has this secret that she has known about for a while but has not revealed publicly until recently. And I actually liked that part of the documentary a lot. The thing that I thought was kind of missing was, okay, here we have Olivia Benson on SVU, who's Hargitay's been playing for more than a quarter of a century, and she never really talks about herself and how her mother's career path or whatever might have influenced her own choice, you know, to join the same profession.
But as a strong, forceful
woman. Yes, a very
woman.
Different character yeah. than what her mom was known for the most part, in the acting that she did on screen. So as a first effort taking on a subject so personal, you know, I was really impressed. We did learn some new things. I think the most notable thing we learned was she was in the car when this accident occurred, but the EMTs or the people who responded to the accident didn't know she was there. And it was only until later in the hospital when her brother asked, "Where is Maria?" which is what they used to call Mariska, that they realized there was another child involved because she had slid and was stuck under the front seat of the car. And so that was mind-blowing, that whole tale. And there were a lot of other nice sort of touches that they added. The most important thing is that this documentary brings up the struggle for women who are attractive. I mean, we're now witnessing it by seeing what is happening with Sydney Sweeney, Spokane's own, in terms of, you know, her acting prowess sometimes being overshadowed by her physical attributes as well.
I'll be a little bit more effusive in the praise here because I thought this was a pretty incredible documentary and extremely moving. And it reminded me of, and this is high praise, it's not as good as, but it reminded me of Sarah Polley's great film, Stories
oh, yeah.
We Tell.
Yeah.
But if her parents had been some of the biggest celebrities of the 1950s, because this movie is doing, My Mom Jane is doing a few things simultaneously. And I think Hargitay weaves them together pretty seamlessly. It's about this family sifting through its own history and reckoning with what they find. It's about what it feels like to be an outsider in your own family, even before you really understand why you feel that way. And it's relitigating the legacy of this cultural figure. And it finds complexities and contradictions, not just in Jane Mansfield, but in the ways that she was depicted. And, you know, documentaries like this always have footage from old talk shows where the male host is asking idiotic and sexist questions. And here we get footage from the Jack Parr show mm-hmm. where Mansfield has dropped the voice and she's talking about how she wants to take her career in a new direction. And everyone is laughing at her.
Mm-hmm.
And
including
Jack Parr is making these bad jokes. Yeah. And it is heartbreaking. And after everything we've learned about her, we feel so angry on her behalf. And then knowing that she basically just fell back into that same persona afterward because no one took her seriously. And I liked the fact that Hargitay, as an actress and as, you know, the child of Jane Mansfield, talks about how her feelings about her mother have changed over the years, that she's sort of sympathetic to what Mansfield had to do in order to keep her career going, but also kind of resenting her for letting the press define so much about her and then having to come to terms with all that. So I thought that this was doing a lot, but in a way that I always found engaging and also educational. And yeah, so I thought this was really terrific.
You know, you have to ask yourself, though, what other way would a woman who is a Texas housewife with a daughter, married, you know, I mean, living in, of all places, Texas, how is she going to make a name for herself in the entertainment industry in any other way except through her physical attributes? I mean,
and also that just goes to show you the genius Jane Mansfield, that she was able to figure out, like, okay, well, I know how to get, and she became massively popular,
mm-hmm.
maybe not in the way that she always envisioned, but you know.
Well, you went back and saw a couple of the movies.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
How do they hold up?
Well, I realized I had never seen an actual Jane Mansfield movie from beginning to end. So I did a double feature of The Girl Can't Help It from 1956 and will success Spoil Rock Hunter from 1957, both directed by Frank Tashlin. And she is so in on the joke. You know, she's doing this kind of Marilyn Monroe-like ingenue thing. And she just has such incredible presence. And Tashlin, you know, he was an animator, so his movies have this kind of cartoonish elasticity to them. He gives her a lot of humanity in both of these movies. Her characters in both films, despite the fact that they're very silly, her characters are grappling with the public's perception of her. And so it's almost like her real struggles were bleeding over into the movies that she was making. But I think if you haven't seen either of those, they're terrific. And mm-hmm. they hold up beautifully well. And they're so funny and bright and full of music and, you know, Technicolor. And I highly recommend both of those along with this documentary, My Mom Jane.
And the other thing that we've glossed over is imagine what it would be like to grow up thinking someone is your father and then to find out, oh, he's not my father?
And the way that she finds out about that is also just, I mean, classic Hollywood weirdness. But, right. I mean, that's another detail here that's just so
strange. And how, as Mary Pat points out, she keeps that secret for something like 30 years? There is a lot to recommend about the documentary My Mom Jane.
I would just say that, Nathan, what you said in terms of this being a revelatory doc, but handled in a way that we're not necessarily accustomed to, is really what makes this worth watching. And I was just pretty mesmerized by the whole thing. I didn't know exactly where it was going to go, but yeah, great first effort. Like to see more.
Yeah, the only thing she's ever done is, like, I think 9 episodes of SVU. She's
directed. As a director,
right.
Mean, yeah.
So this is her feature film
documentary debut.
And, yes. And to be so vulnerable, you know, in this way is,
absolutely.
I mean,
because we think we know her too.
Yep.
And
yes.
We learn a lot more about her.
Yes. Yeah. Good point.
And that was our discussion of the HBO Max documentary, My Mom Jane. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discuss the Netflix documentary Sunday Best, The Untold Story of Ed Sullivan. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the late author and cultural critic Neil Postman. If politics is like show business, then the idea is not to pursue excellence, clarity, or honesty, but to appear as if you are, which is another matter altogether. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.